You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to help you plan that unbelievable travel experience. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Good morning, good afternoon, and good night. Welcome on it all to Monday, Football Monday here on the SB Nation NFL Show presented by DraftKings Fantasy Sports. Check out what DraftKings has to offer this season with code SBNFL because life is more fun when you are in on the action. DraftKings, the crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Age and eligibility restrictions apply. Void or prohibited. See DraftKings.com for details. As noted, it is Monday, January 22nd, 2024, my wife's birthday. Happy birthday, sweetheart. I love you very much. Which means it is the Monday after the divisional round of the NFL playoffs. We have four teams left, three teams left to go, one champion that will ultimately reign over all of us. So we're very excited to talk about it. Make sure to subscribe to the SB Nation NFL show wherever you get your podcasts. Leave a rating, write a review. You can also watch our show on the SB Nation NFL YouTube channel. I say us, the incredible Rachel Prevett is on the ones and twos. Very happy, obviously, after the results of the weekend. My name is RJ Ochoa from Blog on the Boys. With me, the two bestest, handsomest, smelliest writers from SBNation.com. They are Mark Schofield and JP Acosta. Mark, I would like to start the show by asking you, have you seen that Ron Rivera is going to interview for the vacant Philadelphia Eagles defensive coordinator job?
I have not seen that. That is...
Do you want to laugh at them with me? Because
I mean, it's probably an upgrade from Matt Patricia and what he was doing down the stretch. So, okay. I also wonder if you're Nick Sirianni. Is this the road you want to go down? Because, I mean, we're still wondering about Sirianni's tenure and whether he's on shaky ground. You're going to bring in somebody with head coaching experience to be your new defensive coordinator? Curious.
JP.
That feels like hustling backwards a little bit. That feels like you're setting up for Littlefinger to usurp you in the Game of Thrones.
Wow.
There. Like I'm telling you, one big loss in the middle of the season, and next thing you know, Ron Rivera is gonna be coaching that Eagles team. Either way, whoever they pick is gonna be faced with a pretty daunting task of fixing that defense because they don't have the guys to do much of anything well.
So we think that Ron Rivera is Littlefinger. You know, it's pretty rare that you've been a head coach for this long and you go into the coordinator role. The only example I can think of, and I'm obviously very biased here, is Jason Garrett, who was a head coach for 9 years and then went to, like, can either of you name another example?
Wade Phillips, yeah.
Wade Phillips?
Oh, Wade, I guess Wade, maybe Gary Kubiak?
Yeah.
Did he ever go back?
I think he did. Maybe he just likes the Mid-Atlantic. You know, he's been here in the D.C. area for a while. Maybe he's like, you know, Philly, check it out. I don't know. He's also a fan of history. He's also a fan of history because I was on a flight with him from Charlotte to Mobile for the Senior Bowl 1 year. It was like the whole Panthers staff was on the flight. It was when Gettleman was the GM. And he was reading a book about Teddy Roosevelt. And I always asked him about it, but I was just like, I kind of chickened out. Plus, I'm not the world's best flyer, so I was already nervous to begin with. So, but maybe he just likes the history.
Okay. Well, that gets divisional round Monday. I guess it's not divisional round Monday. Conference championship Monday started off with a bang. Gentlemen, we had four games over the course of the weekend, four winners. Do you guys want to go in chronological order? Like, what are you feeling, JP? Chronological or cool order? You pick.
I feel like we got to go cool order based on what happened last night.
All right, let's start then, I guess, in reverse chronological order. The Kansas City Chiefs, JP, outlasted the Buffalo Bills 27-24. They are 3-0 against Buffalo in the playoffs, in the Mahomes-Allen era. We keep getting told, JP, that these two, you know, they have all these battles. This is a one-sided affair. This isn't, you know, any kind of rivalry. Kansas City went the first road game in the playoffs in the Mahomes era. They won. Jason Kelce was shirtless. Taylor Swift was there. And Travis Kelce came back to life.
Patrick Mahomes is the best quarterback in football, and everybody else is fighting for second. I just – when you look at what this team has done and what that team did going into Buffalo with Travis Kelce, Rashee Rice, and a bunch of receivers who probably would not make a roster anywhere else in the NFL. And you go in and score 27 points and you win the game. Mahomes had a phenomenal game. I mean, just looking at the sack avoidance, the big plays, the attacking downfield, it's just, it's so hard to beat this team. You have to be perfect to beat Patrick Mahomes. And it's, it puts a strain on you. I think the Bills, they kind of played to not lose. You know, they ran the ball really well. They ran the ball effectively. Josh Allen did not take that many shots downfield outside of like the fourth quarter when they were losing. It felt like they played to not give Mahomes enough time to do to them what Mahomes has done before. So going in with that fear, your game plan changes when you face the Chiefs. And I feel like that is the biggest testament to Andy Reid and a Patrick Mahomes-led team. Patrick Mahomes is 28 years old, and he'll be going to his, I believe, per Brad Spielberger of Pro Football Focus, he will be going into his sixth start at, in a conference championship, and he's 28. Like, we are rapidly entering, like, the greatest quarterback ever, like, conversation. I think we've been there for a while, but this is one of the most impressive quarterback
in general. Mark, you're well familiar with a quarterback starting in conference championships a million years in a row. The difference, obviously, between Patrick Mahomes and Tom Brady is, in terms of as a regular season starter, regular full-time starter, Patrick Mahomes has only ever ended seasons in the AFC. He's never finished shy of this at any point. It's a team-wide accomplishment that's worth mentioning, obviously, but Mahomes and the offense, as noted, kind of did return to proper form on Sunday.
Yeah, and that was the sort of question coming into this game. I mean, there were a bunch of narratives about this game before it kicked off, but one of them was, okay, this is the year where we might have more questions about the Chiefs' offense than the Chiefs' defense. The Chiefs' defense has played extremely well this season, did a great job, masterful job against Tua and the Dolphins in the wild card round. But we saw this offense sort of come back to life. I think a big part of it, it's fair to point out, you know, Buffalo was so thin coming into this game on the defensive side of the ball, particularly at linebacker, and a lot of the plays that you saw, they're picking on A.J. Klein in coverage with Travis Kelce, which is probably not where the Bills' defensive staff wanted to be coming into this week, but that's where they ended up. But Mahomes is phenomenal. And to have the kind of success, the sustained success that he's had, and to JP's point, like when you're forcing teams to sort of reframe their mindset and approach on how they want to play a game because you're just so worried that we can't leave him too much time or we can't leave this game tied or, you know, whatever you want to, however you want to phrase it, it's just a testament to what they've built and what they've done and what they've accomplished. Now, they got another tough one coming up. I mean, Mike McDonald is going to have some answers for them. That Baltimore Ravens defense was flying around the field on Saturday. And as JP said before we even started, Stroud played incredibly well against that Ravens defense and they didn't score an offensive touchdown. Now you're going to get Patrick Mahomes going up against that. That's going to be fun to watch. But an absolutely tremendous job from the Chiefs on Sunday.
I feel so bad for the Bills. I've hated on the Bills. We crockpotted them a long time ago. And they played well. I mean, they played well enough to win. But I do think, JP, that everyone's going to bag on Tyler Bass for the missed field goal. And, like, I mean, you know, do your job, obviously. But, I mean – Josh Allen had a horrible fumble in this game that if it gets, I mean, these are partly luck at that point. Like if it gets recovered, it's like, we don't get any of that. Sean McDermott went full out galaxy brain on the worst fake punt attempt I think we've ever seen. Buffalo also benefited from what I believe, I don't think we've had this discourse on the show, is the worst. I mean, I'm not saying this is a unique take, but I'm of the mindset it's the worst rule in the NFL, the fumble through the end zone touchback situation. Like Buffalo had all these other things, and we're going to isolate the kick and the field goal and the wind and the wide ride and Scott Norwood and all this stuff. But, like, it did feel, JP, like Buffalo was just riding, and then ultimately just couldn't hang on the rodeo for any more time.
I think Buffalo played to not lose.
Josh Manahan approves.
The way that they structured their offense is, I mean, the run game was working really, really well. And that's something that Joe Brady has kind of implemented when he got the offensive coordinator, like, bump up after Ken Dorsey got fired. The run game was working really well. But despite all of that, I think an underrated thing about how Buffalo played to finish the season was the passing game looked kind of sloppy at certain points. Stephon Diggs was clearly not himself, wasn't getting a lot of targets. The passing game just looked disjointed. And I guess that's like the trade-off you get good at the run game, and then all of a sudden the passing game kind of falls apart. But against Kansas City, I think they lean more on the quick passing game. They kind of became a very efficient offense. But you got to score touchdowns. You got to, if you're going to play that ball control efficient game, you have to end every drive with a touchdown against Patrick Mahomes, because he'll do what he did to you yesterday. Like, it's so tough because, you know, the offense played just about as well as you possibly could. Josh Allen, I think the drops are going to do a damage. Like, they're going to do a number on his total, like, stat line. I mean, the big Stephon Diggs drop was crazy. But it kind of felt like the Bills came in with all the pressure. You know, they were the ones that were playing kind of tight. And then that pressure ended up bursting their pipes at the end.
Mark, to JP's point, Buffalo got down inside the Kansas City 30 twice without walking away with a touchdown. The field goal at the very beginning, they got all the way down to the 9-yard line. And then, of course, the missed field goal from the 26. It does feel like – I talk about this all the time with the Cowboys. Like, they're clearly fighting some sort of, like, demons, right? Like, relative to, like, the drought and the history. And, like, at this point, if you're the Bills, like, how can you not, you know, like, they own you. You know, like, you can't let go of it on some level. Like, you have to blink at a certain point, and they blunk at the wrong time, and it cost them.
Yeah, and you know, scanning through sort of Bill's Twitter, Bill's social media, like there's a lot of
they're down
bad right now. And this was sort of a question going in. I was on WGR, I think Thursday or Friday afternoon, and the hosts up in Buffalo were like, "If we don't win this game, if we don't beat them now, then when?" Like, they're coming here finally. Like, we've got Mahomes and this offense is struggling. Like, if we can't win this game, when are we ever going to beat them? And it very much reminds me of Red Sox Yankees 2003, right? You finally get them to game 7, and then Aaron Boone, of all people, goes walk off on you to break your hearts in game 7. And you're thinking, we're never going to beat them. We're never going to get over this hump. Well, you did the next year. And so, to the Bills fans out there listening, there can be light at the end of this tunnel. I want to sort of piggyback off something JP said, though, because the shift in this game to sort of play not to lose, to quick game, passing game, efficiency, and stuff like that was great. But Kevin Cole, who does tremendous work, had this stat this morning, was like, you know, the Chiefs converted just 20% of their third downs. The Bills converted about half of their third downs, but they faced more third downs as a result of that. And the fact is that a lot of their drives as a result of that ended up with either 3 or field goal tries. They took away some of their big play opportunities or didn't try to hit on some of those. Then you get to the 2nd and 9, which I think is a pivotal discussion right now, because a lot of people are saying, why doesn't he hit Diggs on the crosser when he tries to go downfield for the shot play to get in the end zone? People are like, why don't you throw the crosser? This is kind of like the crux of the whole game plan. Should Allen have sort of checked it down to Diggs, or should he have tried the shot play? He tried to force the shot play, which I think was the right decision. Couldn't get into the throw because he had sort of Dawkins and Chris Jones in his lap and ended up missing it. And then you get the missed field goal. So it was just the tension of marrying that idea with then trying the kill shot fell short.
It's so funny to think about that second down that you talked about. Like, most 9 times out of 10, Josh Allen hits that throw. Like, we've seen him hit that throw. The DB had turned his back to the quarterback. You never want to turn your back to the quarterback, because that's going to end up as a touchdown. You can't see the ball, but he can see you. If Chris Jones doesn't do a great pass rush, then, yeah, that probably ends in a touchdown. And then you're faced with, oh, Patrick Mahomes is driving with a chance to win the game. Like, again, even if that ends in a touchdown, of course, we're playing hypotheticals. They've been in this situation before. They've been in the case where Patrick Mahomes has the ball with a chance to win the game and has not ended well for the Bills. Of course, also referencing Kevin Cole here, who does phenomenal work. Patrick Mahomes against the Bills in the playoffs in 2020 had a 0.57 EPA per play, which is 96th percentile. 2021, 93rd percentile at 0.51. 2023, 0.57, 96th percentile. He constantly beats the Bills. It is just, I don't know what it is. I don't know. He and Andy Reid always have the better game plan and the better play against the Bills in the playoffs. I don't know what you do to get over that hump. I mean, you can fire Sean McDermott if you want, but as long as Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes are in Kansas City, I don't know if any coach.
Yeah, I mean, and that's where the discussion goes in Buffalo next, because there's a lot of discussion about whether, you know, like, you've hit your ceiling with McDermott and it's time for another voice. I don't think you have to go down that road, but I do think you need another voice in that defensive coaching room. Like, I think you need another viewpoint, whether it's a full-on defensive coordinator or like a senior advisor or somebody with a fresh look at how to approach, how to solve that problem. Because JP just walked us through the numbers. They speak for themselves. Like, Patrick Mahomes has carved you up when you faced him. Like, you need, and it's not an easy riddle to solve, but you need another viewpoint, because what you're doing right now when you face them is not working.
I don't mean to continue to relate this back to the Cowboys, but the Bills are in a similar spot in my mind. Like, there was a Shiel Kapadia tweet that came out. I don't know if either of you saw this, late Sunday. Obviously, it wasn't late. Like, this wasn't Sunday Night Football. Like, you know, it wasn't midnight, you know, your time, Mark. But the Shiel tweet was really depressing, obviously, for Bills fans who are down bad. Here it is. He said, "I don't know how you can keep doing this if you're a Bills fan. Last three seasons, they're 30-18 with just two losses by more than 7 points. Nothing to show for it." I mean, like, so I get that you want to say, like, we have to make a change. It's not enough. It's not working. But, like, this just seems to be something like, you know, having the career of Charles Barkley or John Stockton or whatever, somebody who had the misfortune of playing in the era of Michael Jordan, is not anything to be mad about. It's just the coincidence of time. Two quick ones, and then we'll move on. We'll go around. JP, the contractual side of things makes it difficult, but is Stephon Diggs a Buffalo Bill in 2024?
Ooh, it's difficult because contractually, like, you're right, kind of tied to him.
But this is there's some stuff here. Like, it feels like this is one of those, like, we'll find a way.
It feels like you kind of, you know, I'm going to say he's still going to be a Buffalo Bill, because if you think about what they have on that roster now, Gabe Davis is a free agent. And then if you get rid of Diggs, you're going into an offseason with Dalton Kincaid and Khalil Shakir as your two best pass catching targets, who are both still rather unproven. So you need someone there. I think it's more on Joe Brady finding the mesh point between the pass and run.
Does he stay or go?
I think he stays, but I do think that wide receiver is certainly a position they're going to look at, whether it's draft, whether it's free agency, whether it's both. Because, like, I don't know if he's like wide receiver one right now at this point in his career. I think he's like 1B, and you kind of need a 1A. It's like an Adam Thielen needed his Justin Jefferson. I think it's a situation like that. And look, there are going to be wide receivers in this free agency class. There are going to be wide receivers in this draft. I think that's where they should go here.
It's interesting you chose Adam Thielen, who had Stephon Diggs, of all people. Yeah, I only bring this up. It was a year ago during the Super Bowl week that Trayvon Diggs told us at Blogging the Boys, he told all Dallas Cowboys fans to tweet to get Stephon to Dallas, blah, blah, blah. And then shortly after, Stephon, like, kind of, I think I guarantee you both that they're going to connect themselves to the Cowboys this offseason, because that's what they do. Last one. Real quick thoughts, JP. The fumble out the end zone touchback rule. You down with it or you want to change?
If you don't want it to be a touchback, okay, don't.
So you have the wrong opinion here. Mark, please save us.
I'm kind of with JP here. Like, if you, I just saw the tweet from Jeremy Fowler that they're going to look at it. But, like, you know, Travis Kelce had a similar play where he didn't extend it. Like, if it's fourth down and it's going to have its situation, yeah, extend it. Otherwise, I don't. If you want to tweak it, give it to the defense, give it to the team, but at the spot and not a touchback. But yeah, I'm generally okay with it.
What would the spot be? Because it's going through the end zone.
The spot where the fumble happened. Like,
yeah, spot where he lost control of the ball.
So, I mean, like, on this play,
speaking, though, it's the one. It's like, this never happens at the 5 yard line. That's all I'm saying. Like, it's approximately the 1 yard line every single time.
Sure.
I'm also fine. I'm fine with that if we have to compromise. I'm also fine with, if you want to penalize the offense and take them back to their own 25, like, make it a touchback for them, I'm cool with that. Like, there should be some sort of punishment, but taking the ball away is dumb.
Yeah, it's a fumble. Don't fumble.
It's a fumble. Just don't fumble.
Anyway, let's move on. Mark, the Detroit Lions are heading back to the NFC Championship game for the first time since 1991. They had to earn it. It was dramatic. It was cathartic, potentially. But they are indeed playing for a ticket to the Super Bowl. 31-23, the final score over the surprisingly plucky Buccaneers, not just on Sunday, but in general this season. Your thoughts on the Lions, Dan Campbell, whatever you want.
I mean, yeah, I think cathartic is a good way to look at it because it looked like, okay, you're going to win this thing going away. You're up two scores now. And then suddenly, look, they got an answer. You know, Baker goes down the field, they score. But they, you know, held on, an impressive win. JP called their win over the Rams sort of their proof of concept game, you know, given the draft, given all the discussions and what was written about their draft class. The Gibbs touchdown was like the proof of concept, like moment, or it was like the conclusion to that little argument, because what he did to Antoine Winfield Jr. in the open field was the reason why he was a first round pick. Like, to create an explosive play on the ground in a moment like that was massive. And look, hats off to Jared Goff, you know, because I said going into this game, like, look, if there was a defense that was going to find a way to make a mistake, force an interception, force a turnover, give Baker Mayfield a short field, it's what they were going to do. And they were going to get pressure on him. And there were some times where he had to stand in the pocket and take a hit and deliver a throw. And he did that time and time again. A very, very, very impressive performance from them.
In 2022, I wrote that the Lions were becoming an image of Dan Campbell. Every great team is a reflection of their coach. It's why the Patriots were so successful. They felt machine-like. They felt robotic because of the prep, because of the timing. The Cowboys always lose in the playoffs because Mike McCarthy loses in the playoffs as a reflection of the coach. Dan Campbell and the Lions, they are always going to be in a game. They're never going to be out of it. They are always constantly looking for ways to improve. You can go back to this offseason. They trade DeAndre Swift to draft Ahmyr Gibbs. At the time when it happened in the draft, I didn't think it was a great idea because they still had Swift on the roster. I'm like, why do you need Swift and Gibbs and Montgomery? But Jahmyr Gibbs has been, for all intents and purposes, a massive upgrade over
DeAndre. Especially where they Swift. Save him. You know what I mean? Like, keep him on ice, and then unleash him. It's amazing.
Exactly. And then you draft Jack Campbell with the second pick. Their linebacker room has been a lot better this year with Jack Campbell playing off ball. Brian Branch had phenomenal plays this on Sunday. Their ability to constantly improve and never be complacent with where they are. They could have been complacent with 9-8 last year. I mean, okay, we can just run this back. No, they constantly got better. They constantly looked for areas to improve. And when they needed it most, they leaned on their stars. They leaned on the guys that got them to the dance. It is Jared Goff hitting dig routes to Amon-Ra St. Brown. It's the offensive line creating pathways for Jahmyr Gibbs and David Montgomery in the run game. It's timely plays from the young guys that have been developed. The Derek Barnes interception was so cool because earlier in the year, Dan Campbell talked about how Derek Barnes kind of needed to eat it to kind of go through the fire, you know, of being a young linebacker in the NFL. We're playing linebackers really freaking hard right now. It's one of the most difficult spots to play in the NFL. And when you're a young guy, you kind of just need to sit there and go through the fire. And you could see that moment kind of pay off on the game-sealing interception. This team, it's so fun. They're such a fun team to watch because you can see the young guys who have learned and grown. Even Jahmyr Gibbs, not as a runner. In the pass blocking department, he has some great blocks to help open up lanes for Jared Goff to throw. That matters a lot because coming into the draft, it was, can Jahmyr Gibbs hold up in pass protection? That kind of stuff matters, and it speaks testaments to Dan Campbell and the development that they've done on that coaching staff.
I mean, I think this goes without saying, but I think the Lions are an incredible lesson for us all. But I think that we've learned lessons that we didn't even anticipate from the Lions. Like, obviously, you know, this is, you know, up to Brad Holmes, you know, memory and only his, but like, I wonder, like, if he gave consideration to like adjusting the trade with LA and not taking Jared Goff. You know what I mean? Like, this is like a lesson in like, take the quarterback. Like, you know, take you know, don't just live in assumption. Don't just like live off the moment. I mean, like, Jared Goff's stock was as low as it probably ever has been, right, when the Lions traded for him. And the dude dealt with a lot of crap and persevered. And we've all obviously given him his flowers, and he certainly deserves them. But, like, I mean, we all thought, like, okay, the Lions are committing to this idea, and it's going to be this rebuild, and they're going to build this team, and then they're going to get the quarterback. And, like, everything about that changed. Like, when I don't know what the precedent for this is. Like, we've seen the precedent for, like, tearing it down and landing the quarterback and et cetera, or we've seen the precedent for capitalizing on the rookie window, even first-round picks or whatever the case may be. And sometimes it fails, but it's still the right logic. Like, I always thought the way Chicago went about things was still smart, even though it didn't work out for Mitchell Trubisky. Obviously, when the Chiefs signed Sammy Watkins, when they had Mahomes cheap, but, like, this is super cool. Like, what the Lions are doing, like, it's really unique. And obviously, the fans and the story and everything is, like, super impressive. And Mark, if they go slay San Francisco, I mean, like, it will be, I hesitate to say, like, the greatest run ever, but it will be a really special overall sequence.
Yeah, it would be an incredible sequence. And I think, sort of to your point there, like, the lesson is that quarterback evaluation is hard. Rookie quarterback, draft quarterback evaluation is hard. A somewhat or well-known commodity in Jared Goff might be the better play than sort of taking the swing. Because, you know, say they drafted a quarterback in one of the more recent cycles, you know, like Kenny Pickett landed in Detroit around this. Like, I don't know if they're going on this run. And so I think that's a lesson. There's a couple of things I wanted to hit that JP touched on. One, the Patriots machine makes me have to bring up the John Malkovich CBS promo before Jags Pats. The machine stops on one of the greatest football promos ever. If you don't know what I'm talking about, Google it. It is well worth your
time. Go find it.
I've probably rewatched that a couple of times this month alone. And it's years later. It's so good. Also, the talk about the Lions and their draft, I think it gets to sort of an undercurrent of this entire season, which is sort of JP's spine theory of football, right? You're talking about a running back, a linebacker, an interior defensive back who's safety slash nickel, and a tight end. Like, that's what they addressed with their first four picks, and they're in the NFC Championship game. It's getting us to that sort of up the middle through baseball or spine theory and football idea, which I think is sort of an undercurrent of this entire season. Finally, Frank Ragnow. Can we give that man his flowers for a second? Because he got rolled up on. I think it's going to be like whenever their season ends, it's going to be like when the hockey playoffs end for a team and you learn, oh, this person who had a chest injury had a collapsed lung, five broken ribs, a fractured patella, and a torn ACL and played through the entire NHL playoffs. Like, Ragnow's injury list when their season ends is going to be extensive. But to do what he did on fourth and one, to Vita Vea, to stand him up, and then when Vea countered, to re-anchor all on a multitude of injuries for that touchdown, absolutely phenomenal, tremendous. There was somebody on Threads, good follower Sarah, who was like, that wasn't just tremendous, it was necessary. And he did it in that moment, and he deserves his flowers and everything else.
I think the coolest thing about the Jared Goff discussion is kind of the concept of growing where you're watered. You know, I think that is a big thing with Jared Goff. I think to an extent, Tua in Miami, it's when people pour into you and want to see you like grow and develop, you play with a lot more confidence. Jared Goff is playing with a really high level of confidence right now. And it comes from the belief that Dan Campbell and Ben Johnson have in him being able to execute. Of course, you know, it's also Ben Johnson designing plays that are like, they're notable for Jared Goff. Those are the 12-yard digs. I talk about it all the time. Love someone as much as Jared Goff loves throwing a 12-yard dig. The Lions offense is kind of structured around the 12-yard dig. You use play action in the run game to move guys off their spot, and then they hit you in the spine of the defense. That kind of stuff matters. Being in a place where people want you around matters a lot, because you play with a lot more confidence, a lot more freedom. Of course, the way it ended with Jared Goff in LA, there can be blame placed on all sides, but for the most part, it's been a win-win for both sides.
And the Goff lesson is a good lesson for life too. If you're watching this, if you're listening, like, go where you're loved. Stay where you're loved. Like, that's part of life.
I would also, just on top of that, like, I would offer, like, you, like, Jared Goff is an incredible, you know, example of, like, continuing to work and not like getting too big for your own britches. Like, look at the dude who was taken after him. Like, when Carson Wentz got traded out of Indianapolis, like, he was complete. I mean, I don't want to, like, just throw, and I believe the way they handled that was really poor, But like he was completely like, oh man, like Philly was the problem. It wasn't me. Like now I'm here to be your savior and all sorts of stuff. And like I think Carson played better than people like to give him credit for in that initial season in Indianapolis. I'm not saying well, JP, but you know, I mean, whatever. Anyway, Jared Goff was completely fine being humbled by the moment and taking it and not, you know, allowing himself to be like, I'm better than this organization just because of whatever I've been a part of in terms of accomplishments. By the way, the Lions did sign Zach Ertz to their practice squad on Monday morning. Some people, they're calling Zach Ertz a ring chaser. Mark, are you one of those people?
I mean, maybe, but look, Laporte is still dealing with a knee injury. He suffered in week 18. He's playing with, at least, I don't know if he played with that same offensive lineman brace in yesterday as he did in the wild card round. Brock Wright, one of their backup tight ends, he had a forearm injury, so they needed somebody. I mean, imagine, though, any time in the past, like 10 years, 5 years, 6 months, using the phrase, X is chasing a ring by sided with the Detroit Lions. Like, to our friends at Pride of Detroit who are watching right now, pinch yourselves. You're not dreaming. Like, this is happening.
That's, I mean, the comment.
From
Pride of Detroit. Signing in Detroit to chase a ring. What a world. Yeah, like throwback to like Antonio McDice. That's the last person to sign with Detroit to chase a ring.
What a pull.
Yeah, that's why they pay me the relatively moderate in the Bucks.
Vacations can be tricky. You already know how to book flights and hotels, but now the only thing you're missing is, you know, the actual travel experience. Because is it really a vacation if you're just sitting around like you would at home? You need a tool to get the most out of your time away. That's where Viator steps in. You can book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected. And 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
JP, the Green Bay Packers almost did it. And really, more than anything, Kyle Shanahan is such a coward. The 49ers won 24-21 at the very end, Saturday night's game, obviously, against the Packers. This game, JP, incited the Brock Purdy discourse. There was a lot of chatter about Brock Purdy on the internet. People had opinions. People had thoughts. Jordan Love managed to make them so by having the worst decision of all time on his last throw of his incredible season. Your thoughts on the game we witnessed in Santa Clara?
Oh boy! if I'm a Niners fan, that was very uncomfy for about 55 minutes. The Brock Purdy thing, I'm tired of the discussion. So the only thing I'll say is this: he played bad until the final.
And it's okay to say that
after
like, it can be okay. Like you can just say that, and the world doesn't have to.
It's fine to say that. It was in the rain. He was wiping his hands off during a play.
That was so weird.
Like, that stuff happens. You play bad in the rain. Like, that happens. But I think a lot of what makes San Francisco so tough to stop and so tough to beat is that even when Brock Purdy doesn't play well, even when Deebo Samuel goes out with an injury, which is massive, it's very important that Deebo is healthy for that offense. Their offensive, like, uptick, their efficiency goes way down when Deebo doesn't play. So him not being available for the NFC Championship game is potentially huge. But even still, Debo's out. Brock Purdy doesn't play well. Just give the ball to Christian McCaffrey. The touchdown run he had was insane. just it's so impressive, the body control, the contact balance, and then the speed to finish the playoff. George Kittle had a phenomenal day. Trent Williams was awesome. Juwan Jennings is one of my favorite players in the league because he does like traditional wide receiver stuff, but is also a lead blocker. On the big George Kittle catch and run, he sees George Kittle catch the ball and then immediately blocks the DB guarding him into the stands, into the sidelines. If you like, that's so cool to me. But look, man, it's as long as Brock Purdy isn't playing in the rain, like this feels like it's going to be a discussion for the entire offseason, and I'm just not here for it. Please, I have had enough of the Brock Purdy thing. We need to be done with it. From the Packers' perspective, it is very funny that all the comparisons were for Love to Rodgers, and then he pulled a Brett Favre at the end of the game. Like, that was the most Brett Favre of Brett Favre throws. I actually thought this game was really interesting because the defense played well. Like, when we think about the Packers, we don't think of a Joe Barry defense playing very well, but they played great. Like, they were able to defend the run. They were able to defend the pass out of base personnel. Preston Smith was not a meme in pass coverage. But, you know, you just the margins for error in the NFL are razor thin. And you just make those small mistakes and they separate you a little bit. The missed field goal, that's going to be huge. The interception at the end, that's rough. But they're a young team who's going to come back from learning from those mistakes. But at the same time, you kind of feel like, dang, you probably should have won that one. And then also Kyle Shanahan is a coward like that. It is so, so funny that he is one of the offensive geniuses in football, but doesn't know how to manage a clock. I made the tweet early during the game, but it's like Martian Manhunter being like equivalent to Superman in terms of power level, but being his weakness being fire. Like, are you serious, man? Like, come on.
Mark, it does feel like San Francisco's was the most hollow of the four victories over the weekend.
Yeah, I mean, I think if you're a Niners fan, you're not feeling too confident this Monday morning at the water cooler, but then you probably check the weather forecast and there's no sign of rain this weekend, so you feel a little bit better about things. If I'm Brock Purdy, I'm spending a significant amount of time this offseason with a bucket of balls and a bucket of water and getting used to throwing in the rain, because we had this discussion when they lost to Cleveland. It was what that day. And
right.
I literally, RJ, you asked me, like, are you worried about this? I'm like, I'm worried about him playing in the rain. I mean, now we're seeing it. This is why QB hand size day kind of matters eventually. Does this two-game stretch save Joe Barry in Green Bay? Like, does it? I mean, defense played well these past 2 weeks. Does it save Joe Barry?
Man.
I'm just throwing that out there.
It's not just playing well. Like, you limited –
what you did to
two
Dallas,
of the more explosive offenses. I
throw that out there. We heard over the past, month and a half, how much Jordan Love looks like Brett Favre and Aaron Rodgers, and then to have it end with that kind of throw, I couldn't help but thinking about that Brett Favre pick when he was in Minnesota, so that's that. Finally, to the Debo thing, Sports Info Solutions, on-off report for Debo. Their total EPA when he's on the field is 0.18 per play. When he's off, 0.01, a difference of 0.17.
Oh my gosh.
That's big. Passing EPA, when he's on the field, 0.26. When he's off, 0.06. That's 0.2 when he's a difference, when he's not on the field. That's going to be a big thing if he can't go, especially to a team that, you know, like Detroit, has put together a pretty good run here. So that's probably something to keep in mind.
And even with the biggest thing for Debo on offense is the run game.
Everything
goes from 0. Really good to
0.09 on, negative 0.05 when he's off. Like, that's a huge difference in the run game, too.
Kind of shaky. And I think the Niners game against the Packers kind of exposed a little bit of flaws inside the Niners offensive line, which is very much it's being held up by Trent Williams being amazing, which shout out to Trent Williams, but against a team that will you're going to have to score points to beat the Lions. You're going to have to outscore them. It's going to be huge to not have Debo Samuel healthy. I think they said today he's like a 50-50 chance to play. If he doesn't play, that is massive. Because you think about that three-game stretch during the season where Debo did not play.
So you mentioned the number three. This is a general question, but if you're Kyle Shanahan, obviously you're a coward, but and we'll get into that in a moment, but on a 50-50 level, do you trust your like all world team of like, you know, mutants and you know, metahumans to beat the Lions without Debo and you give him 3 weeks to rest for the Super Bowl? Or do you risk it? I mean, you know, it's not an easy choice.
To JP's point, look, he get hurt at the very start of their week six game against Cleveland, and he was out the next 2 weeks, three losses in a row. Like
if you can make it through this game, and it's a huge, like literally the biggest possible if, you give him 3 weeks to get right for like the game of all games. I mean,
that's assuming.
Yeah, you gotta get.
That's what I'm saying. Because
then you're just giving.
Where would you roll the dice? That's what I'm asking each of you. Would you play him or not?
Yeah, this week.
I'm rolling the dice. I'm rolling the dice.
If he could go, he goes. Like,
guys, it's just a question. It can't hurt you. I mean, just relax. I mean,
I'm saying, if he says he can go, he's going because that team.
We didn't really talk about it, but so at the end of the first half, Kyle Shanahan very clearly is playing just to keep the ball away. He's so terrified of the idea that he's going to leave time on the clock and the Packers are going to utilize it to go kick a last-second field goal that he's just like, you know, piddle-paddle around and winds up settling for a field goal himself that the football gods decide is way too cowardice and cause a block on. So equilibrium is kept, and they wound up obviously winning the game by 3 points, so that proved to be significant, but JP, like, this is not unusual for Kyle Shanahan. Like, he is definitely afraid of these moments. He goes way too galaxy brain.
He needs a clock manager coach. He needs to play Madden. He needs to watch some Madden streams of people, like, using timeouts effectively and using the clock effectively and efficiently. This seems to be a problem with, like, most Shanahan
disciples,
guys. Like, Sean McVay had this problem for a large part of, like, up until last year. Matt LaFleur just got over
it. We saw
over
it a little bit year. With Sean McVay against Detroit last week. I mean, like, it's just...
Yeah. I don't know what it is about the offensive geniuses. I feel like Mike McDaniel kind of missed it a little bit. Maybe a little bit. But what is it about, like, just trying to kill the clock? You have the most efficient offense in football. You have stars on the field everywhere. Why are you playing like you have nobody at quarterback and a bunch of nobodies on that offense? You think they're going to – sure, if they – you get the ball at halftime. You get the ball coming out. You have a chance to double dip and go touchdown, touchdown, and maybe that game isn't as close as it is. But it's just – you can't do that against Detroit. You cannot settle for field goals against Detroit because Detroit will try and score touchdowns. That will be the margin for error in this game, in the NFC Championship game. You have to score touchdowns because Detroit is always trying to score touchdowns, which is very funny considering the offensive genius is the one who kicks field goals and the meathead coach is always going.
Yeah, the meathead, like, just want to, like, play football the way it was meant to be played, dude, is the guy who's like, yeah, that's funny. Mark, do you want to call Kyle Shanahan a coward?
I just wonder if he's still scarred from 28-3. Sorry, just had to get that reference in.
Yeah, I mean, but you know, there might be some like reality in that, yeah. Right? Like, I mean, it's, you know,
because I mean, he stayed aggressive in that game, and then you get Dante Hightower with the play of the. That's really swung out with the strip sack. So
that is the most underrated play in NFL history. He had the Marshawn.
The Marshawn right and that sack are the right. Two best plays in Super Bowl history by a defensive player. Changed my mind.
I'm so glad we're talking about Dante Hightower. He is one of the most underrated linebackers.
You know that meme where it's like, what can you talk about for 30 minutes unprompted? And it's me and Dante Hightower and how incredible a player he was.
You're like,
I mean, 270-pound linebacker covering tight ends and rushing off the edge.
You would certainly know better than us, Mark, but like I would put Dante Hightower's contributions as far as the overall Patriots. I don't even know that we can use the word dynasty, but like
he
diamond run.
Marshawn Lynch with a torn labrum in his shoulder. I have one in both shoulders. I can't pick up groceries. And he did that in the Super Bowl. Like, what?
He's directly responsible for two of the like most, the five most catalytic moments.
And he had a huge playoff history. That defense that he did against Jared Goff too. Like,
he was the piece.
He should have been Jared the MVP Goff, of that. The Rams game. Like, I'm still mad about that too. So yeah. Anyway, Hightower,
Not much to offer here. The Baltimore Ravens made quick work of the Texans, in the second half. This game was tied at halftime. Obviously, it was 10-10, just like the Chiefs Bills game was, and then it wasn't anymore. It was only tied, by the way, because the Texans had a punt return touchdown. I wrote this for SBNation.com. I was, carrying y'all's bags a little bit. Do y'all know the last time there was a punt return for a touchdown in the playoffs prior to Saturday?
I mean, I know it was a long time because you wrote the story, but.
Thank you. That's right. Yeah. Good context go there. It was 11 years ago. It was the 2012 divisional round as well. It was Trindon Holiday who did it for the Broncos against the Ravens. In the crazy Jacoby Jones, overtime win, obviously they had. And the Ravens, Rachel, remember this when we get to MFL MVP, won the Super Bowl. So last time there was a punt return, in the playoffs for a touchdown, it happened against the Ravens, and the Ravens wound up winning the Super Bowl. And it seems like that is going to happen this year. The Ravens, JP, just exploded and just like exploded and exploded and exploded, and it was impossible to stop Lamar Jackson over the second half of this game. Hi, Rachel.
Sorry, JP. This is my time to shine. Whoa. All I gotta say right now is like, well, what do all the Lamar Jackson haters have to say now? Like, they're probably quiet because we shut them up. Like, you can't say anything. This guy had a historic performance on the day, 4 touchdowns on the day, 2 were on the ground, 2 in the air. He had 100 plus passer rating. Like, he was just incredible, phenomenal. So I just want to say, I hope that all of the Lamar Jackson haters are shut up finally, because the 1-3 playoff wins, like, you can't say anything now. He looked phenomenal. So I just had to, throw that out
Go off.
Yeah. I hope you rubbed it in. Keep going.
Had this play.
Carry on.
Family members you have, I hope you made it a long day for them, Rachel, because you certainly deserve it.
Oh, yeah. They were definitely hating. All they keep saying is, well, wait till next week. And I'm like, I'll just enjoy this while it lasts because we're going all the way.
That's right.
But carry on, JP. You got it.
I think the funniest thing about this game is in the first half, this looked very much like, remember the 2021 Dolphins Ravens game on, like, I think it was like a Thursday night football.
What's his name? Flip. What's his name? Flip. Yeah.
Lyman. Was it Hunt?
Yeah. Who did that?
Who was it?
Yeah.
It was Robert Hunt.
And that was a Thursday night game. Good call.
Yeah, it was a Thursday night game. Brian Flores just absolutely pantsed Greg Roman because all they did was zero blitz. They would just blitz every single time. And it would not only speed up the process for Lamar, but it would force the offense to change. And Greg Roman couldn't change. All the routes were long developing downfield. For the first half of the game, it was like that. Even from the first drive, the first pressure the Texans sent was absolutely dirty. By the way, D'Amico Ryans decided going into this game to completely break tendency. They don't blitz a lot, but they went into this game saying, screw it. We're throwing everything at Lamar. We're throwing everything at the league MVP. And for the most part, it kind of worked in the first half. Even on that first blitz call, Lamar was drifting away to his right. Like he was under pressure. And they were getting him short of the sticks. Christian Harris had a phenomenal game. But the difference in Greg Roman and Todd Monken adjusted in the second half. They went to more quick routes. They went to using their athletes in space. On the first stick route, Isaiah Likely, stiff arms Desmond King, gets 16 yards. Next one, Aguilar, then Zay Flowers. And it's dinking and dunking, but it's effective. It's effective dinking and dunking because if they're going to blitz, they're going to play off coverage because they don't want to get beat deep. Just throw it short and let your playmakers make plays. This was a phenomenal Todd Monken game in terms of adjustments and a phenomenal one based on all reports by Lamar Jackson going into halftime saying, hey, this isn't going to work. We need to change. We got to step up. That's what MVP's doing. He was forceful in that game. You could feel the force that Lamar plays with when you watch him. The way that he moves, the runs, the passing, you can tell how that defense changed when Lamar has the ball in his hands. So this was a phenomenal game of adjustments by both Todd Monken and Mike McDonald, who, again, like, we seriously have to discuss the run that this Ravens defense is on in terms of who they face this year. They faced Bobby Slowick twice. They faced Ben Johnson, Shane Waldron, Kyle Shanahan. They're going to face Andy Reid. They've pitched shutouts every single time. Like, that is an impressive, impressive run. Like, this is, I made the One Punch Man reference because Mike McDonald is Garu, taking out all the members of the Hero Society. He is taking out every single member of the Shanahan Acolyte or Shanahan Tree, even Mike McDaniel, like that, everybody was getting got. I mean, the one team that kind of got close was Sean McVay, and that was because they had a superhuman quarterback. So they had some superhuman quarterback and some rain. So it's just been such an impressive run for McDonald and that defense, just an impressive run for the Ravens, who have answered every question this year, like emphatically.
Yeah, and I think Mike McDonald, he may still be their defensive coordinator next year, but he's not going to be there for long. Like, this run is absolutely tremendous. You know, to JP's point about the adjustments, look, they were blitzed on 13 of 18 dropbacks in the first half. That game flipped on that first drive of the third quarter because their very first pass and play, three slants to the left, they blitzed, he hits Aguilar. Then you had that stick route, again, another blitz, he hits likely 19-yard gain. Then they had a third-level blitz, and the one from Petrie that came from depth, kudos to Lamar. Okay, because on a lot of these plays, I think it was the stick one, he used his cadence, he saw the blitz, they were in pistol, he bumped Edwards to a regular shotgun alignment, so he was able to pick up that inside blitz. And then on the Petrie one, he came from depth, again, used his cadence, saw it was coming, hit the slant route, replaced the blitz with the ball, right down the field. And then the touchdown run, another great call from Monken, because they were at times spying him. So what do? You go design QB run, you have Edwards as a lead blocker to take on Cashman, who's the spy, touchdown. That's when that game ended. Like, in JP's, you know, comparison to that Thursday night game, and Roman didn't adjust and Monken does adjust and Lamar plays with the adjustments extremely well. Just an absolutely tremendous job at that halftime to first drive. That's when the game ended. And then for McDonald, I mean, I don't know what else you could say about what he's done with this defense. It has been the run that they're on, what they've done. I mean, to what they did against the Lions midseason when it was like, oh, man, you know, potential, you know, sneaky little Super Bowl preview, which is still in play, and just erase them. And then what they did against the Niners, what they did against the Dolphins, what they did this week against somebody that's getting head coach in interviews, and CJ Stroud, who may be Offensive Rookie of the Year. Just an absolutely masterful run.
And there's one more. There is one more to complete the Infinity Stone collection. And now you got to take out.
I mean, Andy, you get the big Reed. Boss now.
You get the final boss.
RJ, I think you're muted.
I said, yeah, you could argue that both ways, because I believe that the Niners have now that they're playing Detroit, will have played every NFC playoff team this season at one point. So you could, I mean, that would be kind of cool. Like, you know, obviously they played, you know, two in the playoffs now, but that would be just kind of a cool thing. I did want to offer on the Houston note, I mean, it's going to be very fun to watch the future of this team. I don't know who it is. I haven't invested enough time to kind of figure it out, but I think that we're a, oh my gosh, of course, away. Like, that's going to happen. Like, Houston's going to acquire somebody that we can't quite envision right now. And it's going to be the most like, oh, duh. Like, D'Amico just got his whatever. You both are smiling. I don't know that you have a name in mind. I haven't, given this thought myself. Do you both have a player in mind?
So I had a player in mind defensively. Levante David.
There we go. That's what I'm saying. Like, it's going to be the most like, now it won't be, but like the most like hiding in plain sight. Like, how did we not see it? How did we not see it? How did we not see it? And then like, oh my gosh, like, he, like, on the subject of Final Infinity Stones, like, he just got, in this case, like, the captain of his defense. You know what I mean? The, like, the patrolman, the, like, sheriff, whatever you want to call it. Like, that's definitely happening this offseason. That's a great call. Or, like, maybe a settlement is, like, Bobby Wagner. You know what I mean? Like, somebody to just, like, instill some sort of, like, corporate knowledge.
They need an OG. They need a vet in the room defensively. They need another like impact defensive player on the defensive line, a second corner, which you can probably get in the draft. But I think this game was kind of like, hey, maybe we shouldn't be crowning Bobby Slowick as like the next great head coach candidate. We might have, and I use we royally here. We kind of jumped out a little bit over our skis because and this has been a problem that Bobby Slowick has had for the entire season. He's been very run heavy for a team that cannot run the ball. And as soon as the Ravens figured out that the Texans couldn't run the ball, that game ended. Because where Houston wants to get you is, we're going to show like we can run the ball. We're going to get into 21 and 12 personnel to make you get into bigger personnel and then throw the ball off of that. But the Ravens were like, we're not going to do it. Like, we're not going to get into our bigger personnel because you can't run the ball. We're good with playing with a lighter box because Justin Madubuike is going to kick butt up front. He had a phenomenal game, excuse me, as well. But I feel like we kind of crowned Bobby Slowick a little too early. I feel like we kind of did the same thing with Dave Canales a little bit.
I mean, Dave Canales was fine.
Canales was fine. I mean,
I'm saying like in the grand scheme of things. Like, give him another year.
On the run game note, again, not that this is the same Final Infinity Stone, but because Damian Pierce ain't it, Devin Singletary has been nice. Derrick Henry to Houston in the offseason.
Why would you do this?
I mean, no, but like, that'd be awesome. That'd be so much fun.
It would be fun.
For me.
Okay. Quickly, because we'll be back next Monday, obviously. Super Bowl picks, conference championship winners. Mark, you're first.
Oh, man. Baltimore coming out of the AFC. I just think they're so good right now. And Detroit, I don't know. I just, there's something about this team, and that Niners win does not inspire confidence.
Okay. So you're going Ravens, Lions.
So, yeah. So in the beginning of the season, I don't know if you guys remember, but my preseason Super Bowl pick was Chiefs, Niners. And I'm not going to choose them again because I don't think it's going to happen. But I also think that the Super Bowl graphic, like, conspiracy theory, I'm starting to kind of buy in a little bit. I'm sorry, like, hey, this thing has legs. So I'm going to go Ravens, Niners.
So you're okay. It's kind of so like you're leaning into the conspiracy.
I'm leaning into it. I'm not going full Rodgers, but I'm leaning into it.
By the way, so they usually unveil like the next Super Bowl logo like on the Monday after. If it is Chiefs, or excuse me, Ravens, Niners, it'd be like, it will be the most like live stream. Yeah, like people will be like dying for the logo.
It's just going to be white and people will be like, no, that's Dolphins colors or
Okay, so you're going Ravens, Niners. Mark, you're going Ravens, Lions. I'm also taking the Ravens. So clean sweep for the Ravens here as far as the AFC. We're the losers that are doubting Patrick Mahomes.
Imagine that.
And I'm kind of with you, Mark. I think you've got to either be like, you know, good enough or, and I mean this in a good way, like inexperienced enough to be able to beat the Niners. And I think the Lions are like a perfect combination. Like they're good enough while also like I think most teams are afraid of the Niners and they play into that. And like the Lions don't know any better. Like they're just like, we're here. We don't care who you are. Like, and all that stuff, all that rah-rah stuff, like kind of works for games like this. So I'm going to take Ravens, Lions, and let's enjoy. Rachel, if you could join us and offer your Super Bowl pick and anything else you'd like. And of course, your MFWP award handout, please.
Yes. Super Bowl pick, Ravens, Lions. I feel like that's easy, especially with Debo. If we don't know if he's going to be able to go this upcoming weekend, that's a huge loss, like you guys already touched on. And so Ravens, Lions for sure. Today, I'm going to give it to Mark. Not Mark. Sorry.
Oh, it's like the Oscars where they like read the wrong one.
Wow, you're La La Land.
RJ, sorry.
Right, let's go. I'm Moonlight.
You're Moonlight.
Let's go.
Rewind. Sorry.
That is thank you, Rachel, first of all. Thank you, Mark. Thank you, JP. Thank you, Lamar. Thank you, Jared Goff. Thank you, Dan Campbell, even. I will say that is if I had to pick like my five favorite moments ever to be on Twitter, that's in the top five. Like the sequence around that was incredible, just to like experience everything. And then I remember, was it Emma Stone who won Best Lead Actress that year for La La Land? I remember like there was some confusion about the envelope and whatever. And she was like, well, I saw the envelope, and like her comment like added to the, you know, the like intrigue and the mystery. By the way, Pride of Detroit notes that 3/4 of us are picking the Lions. JP, what do you have to say to the Lions fans who you don't believe?
Tell Tell that to the NFL scriptwriters, man. I'm just
meaning it to the Jeremy, we can say that if the Lions lose and it is Ravens-Niners, that you should definitely write something for Pride of Detroit about how it was a conspiracy working against Detroit as far as the logo is concerned. So look at us, you know, creating content for you. Much like I helped Mark and JP out at .com. Now I'm working on stuff for Pride of Detroit.
Yeah, I mean, look, it's just RJ Nation.
Imagine the NFL conspiring against the Detroit Lions. Like, saying that phrase, like, 10 years ago. That's wild, right?
Yeah. That's crazy. As we leave, Mark, I would like you to tell us something that you promise to watch between now and next Monday's episode. And it cannot be a sporting event.
Oh, that's easy. Season 3 of Slow Horses on Apple TV. It is based on a series of books about spies and MI6. It's fantastic. The books are great. Watch the premiere of season 3 with my wife on Saturday night. And tremendous television, so I can't wait to get to episode 2 and beyond.
Okay. I finished Jury Duty over the weekend. Had anybody seen that?
It's supposed to be good. I haven't watched it, though.
It is very good, but also like kind of Truman Show terrifying. So it's on Prime. It's about, quickly, maybe Rachel, JP, or Mark, when you're not watching Slow Horses, if you want to watch it. There's a fake jury that is like put on, like for a fake case, and everybody involved is an actor except for one person who believes it to be real. And so like everyone is like going along with it, and they have to like sequester him and everything. And so like he believes this to be real the entire time, but everyone is just like going along with the joke. It's all these like improv actors. It's really, again, very Truman Showy, but very entertaining. And he winds up being very wholesome. If he weren't, then this would really suck. So thankfully he was.
Wow. Interesting. There we
go. JP, say one last word and we leave.
Lions.